This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I like to think I have grit. You know, what they used to call stick-to-itiveness. But what is grit exactly? And why is everyone talking about it so much? A researcher by the name of Angela Duckworth has a lot to do with that. She's written books, given talks, she gets quoted a lot. But she used to be a math teacher in New York City until something started bugging her. Some of her smartest students, the ones who learned new concepts quickly and easily, they were not always the ones doing well in school, and some of her top performers struggled a lot. She became obsessed with that observation and left the classroom to become a psychologist. Angela went on to study kids and adults in all kinds of super challenging situations. Here she is explaining it in a TED Talk.
In every study, my question was, who is successful here and why? My research team and I went to West Point Military Academy. We tried to predict which cadets would stay in military training and which would drop out. We went to the National Spelling Bee and tried to predict which children would advance farthest in competition. We studied rookie teachers working in really tough neighborhoods, asking which teachers are still going to be here in teaching by the end of the school year. And of those, who will be the most effective at improving learning outcomes for their students? We partnered with private companies, asking which of these salespeople is going to keep their jobs and who's going to earn the most money. In all those very different contexts, one characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. And it wasn't social intelligence, it wasn't good looks, physical health, and it wasn't IQ. It was grit.
The idea of grit is really compelling. But KU researcher Christopher Kirkhessler thinks we might be taking it to some dangerous conclusions, particularly in the classroom. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
I'm feeling pretty gritty.
Are you?
Yeah.
Good. Good.
So first, what is grit and how is the idea being applied right now in education?
I think Duckworth gave a very nice overview of why it has sort of a cachet right now and a lot of attention is being given to it. What's interesting about how it's sort of being taken up is that it's not really being foisted on schools. It seems as though there's almost this ad hoc teachers looking for something to explain what they're seeing in their classrooms, how to raise test scores, how to make sure that kids are able to overcome all the challenges that they have, not just in the classroom, but in their lives. And grit gives a really nice narrative of how to sort of situate your experiences and understand yourself and understand what success is. And so it's interesting how it has sort of percolated throughout the educational ecosphere, both through popular media. Her TED Talk has millions of views. The book is a New York Times bestseller. There are other books that don't necessarily focus on grit per se, but have, you know, sort of followed that same kind of script and have
maybe a synonym of grit.
Yeah, right. It's grit by another name. Exactly. So it sort of arrives at this moment where you have people looking for answers that go beyond test-based measures. And that, I think, comes out of the accountability No Child Left Behind movements from the early 2000s.
So we're about to jump into your concerns, but can this grit idea be useful? Do you see a good in it?
The question that I ask of grit is not about whether it is good or bad. I think that is something that it's been posed and it's being debated right now. And I think that's actually, in fact, the question that I hope teachers, educators are asking themselves. I don't want to weigh in with a clear cut answer. I want my research is to help show its dangers and its limits.
So what are the dangers as you see them and as you've discovered them, I guess?
Yeah, I think one of the really interesting aspects of grit is that it is something that looks brand new. We're talking about it as if it were she talks about it as kind of as a discovery, right? That she goes to these places and is trying to identify the factors that determine success. But in another way, it's a very old story. And even if we just...
What is that old story? Told in the old language we might have used.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have the word grit itself evokes a sort of frontier narrative of I mean, John Wayne's True Grit film is a touchstone, a cultural touchstone. But that itself is built on a sort of historiography of the nation, of what it means to be American.
Like, and Western, rags to riches is another way of saying grit, kind of.
Rags to riches. So there's that whole, yeah, exactly, this sort of lift pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You got it. Yeah, see, we all know it. It floats, right? But also it's distinctly tied to a sort of settler narrative of what made America special, different from other nations that were also democracies. But this is a sort of, you know, it gets wrapped into something that was called at the turn of the 20th century pioneer democracy. So that there's a sort of egalitarianism to it, but also a responsibility to take care of yourself above all else. It's a very deep narrative of individualism that's woven into how Americans sort of talk about what it means to be American. And so there are dangers in that. There's,
like what?
So I think one of the big dangers, and this has been, you know, this is not my discovery either, but that it plays into a whole way of thinking about social inequalities, how to explain them, who is responsible for them. It within the discourses of psychology, it responsabilizes the individual and maybe the family unit, maybe the school to transform the inner qualities of someone from someone who does not identify as being able to persevere through challenges to someone who does.
So, like, if you were a grittier person, your incredible economic hardship would not be a flaw, it would not be a hardship at all. It would turn into, like, a great asset.
Right.
That's the dangerous narrative?
Yes. I mean, it's a dangerous narrative in that it's not, you know, it in terms of, you look at sociological studies of income inequality and movement between classes, we've actually really, we have dramatic inequalities socioeconomically today. And actually movement between social classes is less than it has been in the last, in many decades now. So it doesn't jive with what research is saying is actually going on at a structural level. Maybe it tells a nice story for an individual who's able to overcome their odds, but as a way of thinking about how to address social issues, there's a danger in that.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and we will be digging in deeper on this with Christopher Kirkhessler. We'll hear about more of his research on grit on Central Standard this morning. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with KU researcher Christopher Kirkhessler about grit. Christopher is an assistant professor in the School of Education. And Christopher, you were just saying that our enthusiasm for grit sometimes has the flaw, maybe, of kind of responsibilizing, as you put it, the person in dire circumstances for their maybe inability to pull themselves out of those circumstances rather than looking at the larger influences acting on them.
Right.
You've worked in the classroom yourself with at-risk kids. Tell me about your students and what you observed that kind of sets the stage for some of this research you've done.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that gets to, like, one of the interesting aspects of how grit is made into a sort of pedagogical tool that's different from how it's understood as a psychological object. Because what grit does as it enters a classroom is it sort of sets the parameters of what counts as grit, right? So that you're not necessarily, as a teacher, thinking about grit as all of those big sort of larger social structures that are impacting children's lives on a daily basis. Instead, like one of the aspects that I researched was you're given a character growth card. And the character growth card is something that outlines very specific ways in which the child and the teacher are supposed to see and evaluate to what extent are they showing grit.
Like what? What are some of the ways that teachers observe grit or are taught to observe grit?
So, and this character growth card that I looked at, which actually goes, it's something that's shared among a whole network of schools, and we can talk about that later. But it's things like tried very hard after encountering obstacles, demonstrated a won't give up attitude. They're generalized statements, but they are really reflecting on how they're performing in a classroom setting. Are they trying hard after experiencing failure on a test? or in a classroom activity. So it becomes this way of sort of organizing how the teacher and student interact with one another, how they explain to one another, how they understand what's happening in a classroom.
It gives what does that miss? I feel like you're saying it maybe misses how they might show grit in a situation that the teacher can't observe in the classroom.
Right. It's almost like blinders in terms of what you talk about and what you don't talk about. It's assuming that all students sort of come in. There's a whole even sort of ethos of inner city schools that are school reforms that are going on right now called no excuses. And that means you leave your excuses. First of all, your social situation becomes an excuse. You can't lean on it as an explanation for why you're not performing in the classroom. You need to leave those excuses at the front door. So is how it sort of goes. And so then the discourse of grit is about, okay, what are you doing right now? Okay, all that aside, are you able to, you know, when the going gets tough, are you giving up? Are you saying this isn't worth it? Or are you saying, I get it. I have a bigger goal in mind. I'm going to persevere towards that come what may, no matter what's going on in my home or in my own life.
So it's like maybe a student who doesn't show grit on a test might have shown grit in like a circumstance outside the classroom.
And coming to school that day. And I think this is one of the critiques that is out there of grit. It's like, what gets called grit? I mean, is persevering through there's all sorts of discussions right now about the sort of, especially in our current political climate, of the sort of extant fears that some families have of being deported right now. And that's happening. To be able to sort of put that aside, come to school.
And evaluate grit while ignoring that.
Yeah. You have to sideline that. And that's not to say that teachers can't bring that into the conversation or can't be cognizant of that. Of course they can. But the discourse of grit by itself doesn't really have in it a way of factoring in those social differentiations that are going on of experience, of what it means to be a student in America today and maybe to not be seen as fully American for any number of reasons going back to our history.
You know, I have two relatives who both grew up during the Great Depression. They were both poor. They both lived sort of in downtrodden urban environments.
Yeah.
I could see the impact of that whole set of circumstances on both of them, but it looked very different in terms of how they grew up. And I wonder if we also oversimplify how our struggles, how persevering through them even, really affects us in the long run.
I think that, I mean, this is what grit on one level is trying to give attention to. And that's why I do try to make a little bit of a distinction between the research on grit that Duckworth, you were using as the lead-in, is doing versus how it's being taken up in classrooms, how it's being operationalized as a pedagogical tool. And I would even just add there, I mean, I think it's important to note that Duckworth in recent years has become critical of some of the ways it's entered.
Of how people are using her very research.
Yeah. And I think that's important to note, that these things kind of escape the ambit that has been sort of idealized for them and then enter into all these other spaces, get taken up to make, you know, as we were just saying, very simplified explanations of who succeeds, who doesn't, and why. And I think that that's something that I almost think about this kind of research and the need to talk about grit as like trying to put a warning label on it. It's like, can you use it? Well, sure, you can use it. But you should be very cognizant of what is carried in with it.
Christopher Kirkessler with us from KU. We will get right back to this conversation about grit. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And we're talking to Christopher Kirkessler, a KU researcher who's been debunking some of the popular mythology around grit and how we apply it. Yes, we can learn a lot by overcoming challenges in our lives, but we might also miss a lot about kids and how to help them when we take it too far. And Christopher, you've said that this idea of grit and the way we think about it is very American. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. It was something I was aware of as I was doing the research. I've lived and taught abroad, so it was made aware as I began teaching in the U.S. that this whole discourse of positive psychology, of having curiosity, grit, optimism, it was not something I had come into contact elsewhere. But it was really hit home when I actually presented on this research in Sweden. And I did a whole 20-minute presentation, had, you know, explanations of this, that, and everything else. And at the end, the first question that one of the Swedish researchers asked was, okay, but what is grit? And it reminded me, and then the subsequent conversation made it very clear that this whole way of thinking about a person, this very, as you said, responsibilizing discourse, this individualized discourse, is unique to the United States, particularly. It's not only of the United States, but it's something that's very deep in our political ethos and in how we think about what the responsibility of a school is. And in Sweden, for example, it's a social democracy. It's a democracy like ours, but they think about the society very differently. There's a notion of interdependence and collective well-being that's really foregrounded in a way that would make this kind of responsibilizing inappropriate as a way of teaching children how to be.
Can you give an example of something that you've encountered either in the classroom yourself or through your research that shows how a kid might be showing grit in a way that isn't evident in the classroom?
Sure. So in this, I think the report card is very instructive because it focuses on academic achievement. And one thing I should have added earlier is that this all sort of is related to the accountability movements that came out of No Child Left Behind and then Race to the Top that really put the emphasis on achievement testing. But what was being sort of seen as the emphasis on achievement testing was that we're overemphasizing academic qualities of success. We're de-emphasizing these broader sort of amorphous character qualities.
So let's test for those too.
Right. And how do we do that? Okay, well, we need to make surveys. We need to have teachers and students sort of calibrating how they see one another. And then they actually, like, on that character growth card, what's interesting about it is it's different than like the citizenship report card you might have gotten as a kid where they say, okay, your honors or you're unsatisfactory on these different, you didn't clean up after yourself, so, you know, that sort of thing. It's a formative assessment. You're always self-assessing and then putting those assessments in alignment with teachers' evaluations. And again, what are the teachers able to see? In more likely than not, we're trained to focus on what's happening in our classrooms, not what's going on outside it. And how the school and the neighborhood maybe relate to one another.
But can you give an example of someone who was dealing with something outside of it that would be just totally invisible if...
Sure. I kind of referenced it earlier in terms of the fear of deportation that's happening right now. I taught in a school that was primarily Latino, primarily Spanish-speaking in the homes. And this was years ago. This is before some of the changes that have been happening in immigration and enforcement had really started to take hold. And even then, we had students who would not come to class for days at a time because they thought that there were ICE agents that were looking for the dad or the mom or something like that. And their commitment to school, you couldn't question, right? I mean, it was... these are students that were I was close with and who I knew, and I knew the families. That might be seen as indifference. I don't want to put it on grit, right? I mean, I think that's too neat and it's just complicated. And that I think what...
But if you're measuring grit by attendance.
And perseverance in completing tasks, which is sometimes how it gets calibrated as it comes into classroom, then you're missing a bigger picture. And I think, again, that's a danger of it, not inherent to it. And teachers can certainly act against it. But it doesn't take into account those other factors.
And just even thinking beyond that, just even as an adult, I feel like some of the biggest fights we are fighting are invisible, just even to people sitting right next to us. It's being able to measure grit. Mm-hmm. Seems tough, no matter who's doing the measuring, what they're able to witness of your life. You know, like, people fight invisible battles all the time.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's part of this is, you know, I'm focusing on grit, but part of what the research I think helped make visible to me is that how does grit enter into schools so easily? Well, it's already part of the discourse of schools. It gives a precision to what schools already do, which is to sort of create an ideal type of person, right? But what that ideal, it's not that we necessarily want to abandon that, but that ideal type acts on everyone in different ways. And it fails in many ways to take into account those internal struggles, social pressures, the social situation, I mean, in broadly explained. So, yeah, that is That's the danger of these kinds of tools.
You are a parent, I mean, of a very young kid, but how do you think about grit as a parent?
Carefully. She's in a temper tantrum stage right now. So there's been an ongoing discussion between my partner and I about how to best work through that with her. And there is a sort of, you could say that, you know, when you say, okay, buck up, you know, you're okay. No problem here. You're going to make it through. Is that a grit discourse? I don't know. I mean that.
Or does the tantrum itself show grit? Like, no,
right.
I want the ice cream.
Yeah. I mean, and that's actually a really good point about how the ways in which grit is evaluated in schools would seem to preclude the possibility that people could be very gritty in resisting something that is unjust in the school. Or in the Parkland shooting, are those kids showing grit? I mean, you could argue they are by the tools that the teachers are asked to use to evaluate grit, that wouldn't show up.
Well, we will find out how the concept of grit could be applied more effectively and maybe more compassionately in just a few minutes on KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Christopher Kirkhessler, a researcher at KU who studied grit. That's a major buzzword these days. Everyone wants to instill grit. They try to measure grit. But Christopher's research and experience paint a complicated picture of how we do that and how well it really works. Hi again, Christopher.
Hi.
So in a perfect world, is there a way to apply what we know about grit that differs from the current trends and maybe gets us past some of the flaws that we've been discussing?
I mean, I think that has been the hope of treating it as a psychological object, this discourse of grit is old, right? That we talk about, I mean, it coming from the turn of the 20th century. And in sort of these tools that we've been talking about to have it become a tool of self-evaluation and evaluation of students, it's to sort of purify it, to say, okay, you know, there may be a cultural value ascribed to it, but how can we really measure what it takes to be successful? And that has been really the bugbear of my research, is to say that's a dangerous way to think about these sorts of discourses about people.
So even the question itself is problematic?
It is, because it forces us to make distinctions between people. And so it's not problematic in the sense of it's bad, we shouldn't do it. It's problematic in what it's not examining as why this is a reasonable way to think about people. And I think the example of Sweden is important in saying there are other ways to organize society or to think about how collectivities are, or a society sort of understands itself and its responsibilities to each other. So this built into grit is, as we've been talking about, it's individualizing, it's responsibilizing. And when you have these extant social inequalities, then it can become a very dangerous way of explaining to someone why they are where they are and what it's going to take to change their social circumstance. And it's leaving unexamined this much longer historical trajectory of how America understands itself as people who, if you think about it in terms of the westward expansion, this was it was a racializing discourse. It was to argue this is what distinguishes settler from Native American. This is what justifies the expropriation of land, because it's not being used resourcefully. It's not being brought up to its higher developmental potential. And that gets brought into how we then think about self and other, that I think can be very, very dangerous and needs to be sort
but
of
like,
foregrounded.
At that time, maybe, you know, those Western settlers couldn't see exactly how the native population was using the land, for example.
Exactly. Right. It becomes a justification of saying, well, we have grit, or the equivalent of, you know, we are developing, we are the ones who are responsible developing this land to something else.
We're going to homestead,
yeah. And it's again, this is deep into our culture. You look at the state seal of Kansas, look at the state seal of Minnesota, look at the state seal of all these, and it's part of the narrative of what it means to be American. And so that's why I think grit has really, in a way, taken off, because it brings us back to a sort of ideal of what America is supposed to be. But that ideal is built on this idea of difference, what makes America exceptional.
Does it also make us feel better about problems that are too big to solve, or that feel too big to solve?
This goes to a whole sort of argument about democracy, right? And whether democracy is has to center around social problems and come up with social solutions, or whether it's a collectivity of individuals who are each, you know, making the most of their circumstances. That's an essential question of democracy that doesn't get that is assumed by grit rather than treated as a question. So that's what I want to link it to.
In your research, you have done even more cross-cultural comparison than we've had a chance to talk about today. You talk about something, a similar but different concept in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So my dissertation work was in Kenya, and I was looking at low-fee for-profit schools, which are related to this but different as a research project. But part of what was very interesting about being there was that there was a discourse called wiadi, or a term called wiadi that was about – that could be easily glossed as equivalent to grit. But it has a different connotation altogether. It goes back to what we were saying about, well, is grit about hunkering down and following the rules and achieving what has been told to you as what is worth achieving? Or is it a discourse of, yeah, putting, you know, refusing and holding fast to
an idea? Can you explain that? How is it used in Kenya?
Yeah, so, well, it really took form as a form of colonial protest. Kenya was a former British colony. The people who were colonized drew on, some of them in Kenya, Gikuyu, it's an ethnicity in Kenya, drew on discourses of wiadi to say, this is, our social identity is oppositional to the colonial oppressors. We are not British, we're Gikuyu. Wiadi is how we understand ourselves. It is a discourse of reliance, but it already has in it this political connotation of, we're not going to be schooled to be the kind of person you want us to be. This is who we are.
And it's anti-authoritarian.
It's importantly anti-authoritarian, right? And this goes to the, like we were mentioning earlier, the Parkland shootings. Are they gritty? I mean, you could argue they're absolutely gritty in that they've been suffering all manner of insults, right? As they've been like, they're too young to protest, or they don't know what they're talking about, or this, that, and the other. All these things trying to silence them, and they've done nothing but persevere, right? So are they gritty? You could argue they are. But again, with the tools that teachers are given to evaluate grit, it doesn't figure into that as a way. So it's important to keep the boundaries of what we understand as grit maybe a little loose, because otherwise we may be acting out these political discourses without our even sort of thinking about the broader impact that they could have on teaching children what it means to be a good person. Does it mean to follow the rules and to never complain and never give up and just accept your lot and make the best of it? Or does it mean something else? Could it mean something else?
Well, Christopher Kirkhassler, this has been really fascinating, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to share your research with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Gina. I appreciate it.
Our guest today is a debunker of grit, and he joined us from KU School of Education. Central Standard will be back tomorrow with new research showing Kansas Cityans with a lot of education leaving town for better jobs. We'll also hear about ukulele fanatics. Tune in for that tomorrow at 10. I'm Gina Kaufman. Thanks for listening.